If you're a sustaining member, your reliable monthly donations help keep our focus on programming and less on fundraising. If you're not a sustainer yet, visit WPR.org and become one right now. Your secure, ongoing gift of $5 or $10 a month will feel great, and it'll keep Wisconsin Public Radio strong for you and your community.
Stay connected with the WPR app on Google Play and the iTunes App Store. It makes it easy to listen to WPR live and read recent news stories. You can also hear WPR programs on demand. WPR is everywhere.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. Wisconsin's primary election is 2 weeks from today. This morning, we'll talk about the Democratic gubernatorial primary, where eight candidates are on the ballot, and only one of them will get to face Republican incumbent Scott Walker in November. Who will it be? Why are there so many Democrats in the field? Is this a good or a bad thing? We'll get a couple of perspectives on these questions. We'll get yours as well. Who do you like in the field? Why do you think so many are running? And who has the best chance of winning in November? You can let us know what you think at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email is ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Two guests this hour, Joe Winicky, a former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Joe, good morning.
Well, good morning, John.
And John Sharpless, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. John, welcome.
Quite glad to be on.
You can never have too many Johns on a radio broadcast. That's
it's easy to remember.
That's right. Just say, hey, John, somebody's going to answer. Yeah. Okay.
John, and Joe.
Yeah, there we go. It's alliteration. We do that on public radio.
Okay.
Hey, let's get started. A recent Marist College and NBC News poll has Democrat Tony Evers with an 8-point lead over Governor Scott Walker if the election were held today, which it isn't. Meanwhile, a poll from Emerson College showed a similar result, giving Evers a 48-41% advantage over Governor Walker. Joe, we'll start with you. Does this polling really tell you anything about the state of the race?
Well, it tells me Scott Walker is very vulnerable. Even, you know, I kept hearing from partisans that that if they didn't like the Marist poll, that it must be an outlier. But then you have a second poll that shows similar results, and usually that shows something. It hasn't been, if I were a Republican, I'd be very nervous about the political landscape today. I think it bodes very well for, or very poorly for them and very good for Democrats.
John Sharpless, how do you interpret these numbers?
I was shocked. I was really surprised that the margin was this. That's almost double figures, isn't it?
Well, 8 points is pretty close, yeah.
Well, I thought the Marist poll was 13 points.
Oh, okay, well, maybe my math was off. It was 56 to 44, so yeah, that would be more than 8 points.
It's certainly early to make a judgment on this, but this is really surprising. Joe's been predicting that support for Walker was really soft, haven't you, Joe?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Since I'm on a lot of the Republican mailing lists, they've been trying to get people excited about this race for 3 months. And unless the Republicans show up, they're going to lose their governor here. I think there's a kind of apathy right at this moment among Republicans, and clearly Democrats are very highly motivated. I'm sure Walker and his staff are concerned.
The only thing I would ask is, you know, we were in a fairly similar place with in 2016 with the numbers in the U.S. Senate race, Feingold Johnson, and we all know how that turned out. So, I mean, is it kind of early?
There was a big difference there. There, Russ is, I watched that race very closely. Russ is a close friend of mine, and his numbers were eroding every month. They were, you know, he was 11 points, then he was 8 points, then he was 5 points, and the trend was very bad. And then you had the presidential race on top of that, and So the trend at Lyon actually was the opposite of what we're seeing here, where it was very close, and now you're seeing polling that shows that the Democratic candidate, especially if it's Tony Evers, may be gaining a lead. So the trend lines are exactly opposite.
Okay, so, and I'm glad you brought that up, because these polls we were just talking about, the Marist and the Emerson, they differ from the Marquette University June poll, which had Governor Walker leading Evers by 4 points then. Is it so, you know, the trend line is heading in the direction of the Democrats? Is there any skepticism of the polling we're seeing? How many grains of salt should we give it at this point?
I wouldn't count out the Republican Party on this thing. I think they're going to come in real hard. No matter who wins the Democratic primary, they're going to come down really hard in the fall with their advertising. It's going to be a very aggressive campaign. Tony Evers, I don't know if he can handle getting... Frankly, I think it's going to be a rough campaign. This will be the first time Tony Evers has ever gone up against somebody as rough as Scott Walker. So they could easily chip away at these numbers.
Governor Walker got the okay this week for his $200 million plan to lower Affordable Care Act costs, his latest effort to work within the existing confines of the law amid efforts to end it. Democrats say that this is an election year ploy to score points on health care, but the governor says that the federal government failed to lead and that Wisconsin has stepped in here. John, what's your take on the back and forth?
You know, I've been thinking about this race. I'm not so sure this is an issue-driven race. If I was one of the candidates, particularly on the Democratic side, I'm not sure what issue I would emphasize. I think this is a very simple kind of visceral campaign here. The Democrats are excited. They really want the position back. They're motivated not only nationally with their hostility to Trump, but within the state and their hostility to Walker. I think this is more of a gut response to Walker and the National Republican Party than it is any specific issue. What do you think, Joe?
I agree with you. I actually think, as the governor now, I've just noticed, is coming up with spending a whole bunch of money defending Foxconn. I mean, the die is cast on a lot of these issues. One of the problems that Scott Walker has, besides, he's got 100% name recognition and has never cracked 50% approval in the last 4 years that I've seen, is that he's got the albatross of Donald Trump around his neck. And I don't think issues are going to drive this race. I agree with John 100% on this. I think there's gut reactions. It's in people's gut. There's a visceral reaction by Democrats saying, we want to stand up and say we are against Donald Trump and all the people that are defending him. And on Republicans' case, I agree with John. There's a certain amount of tepidness and apathy, no matter how much they try to drive this up. And then you've also got another hidden case which will help the Democrat for governor, and that's that Tammy Baldwin will help drive the liberals to the polls.
And it is about turnout in the end, isn't it? I mean, and the Democrats seem to be really excited now. What do the Republicans have to do to get their base to the polls, John Sharpless?
Well, I get the emails. Every time I open up my emails, it's the Republicans are telling the party to get motivated, get out there, send money, talk to friends. It'll be interesting to see if they can motivate them. If you look historically, if I can be an historian for a minute, it's, with the exception of Tommy Thompson, it's very hard to be a three-term governor in the state of Wisconsin historically. We tend to be a state that elects our governors two times in a row, and it's a rough, no matter which party you're in, it's really rough to run a third time. So I think Walker's fighting that tradition. And also, I think the state tends to swing back and forth. It'll swing to a conservative direction for a while, and then it'll swing back to a progressive direction. So I think that Walker has a lot of things to struggle with independently of his specific issue orientation.
Okay. Well, we'll continue our discussion. And one of the things that we're going to take a break and check some news here in just a moment. One of the things I want to talk about when we come back, Joe, is whether or not any Democratic candidate has been really able to break away from the pack. And the other thing I'd like to know is, why are there so many Democrats running? That That should be an interesting question as well. And I know our listeners are going to be interested in this. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Morning. We'll continue our discussion with Joe Wenneke and John Sharpless. And with you, if you choose to join us in just a moment, we're going to take a break, check some news, and come right back. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Eight Democrats are competing for the chance to face incumbent Governor Scott Walker in November. The primary is just 2 weeks away. If you're a Democrat, who are you supporting in this eight-way race? My guests are former state senator and Democratic Party chair Joe Wenneke and UW-Madison history professor John Sharpless. You can join the program at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joe, when you look at the field, is there anybody on the Democratic side who really has broken away from the pack?
Well, let me state that I am supporting Tony Evers. So when somebody calls and says, oh, he's shilling for him. I mean, the reality is that this race has been Tony Evers around 25% to 30%, everybody else around 2% to 6% ever since the beginning. But there are eight candidates running. Several still have a chance. I would think Evers is in a pretty good position as we speak with 2 weeks to go, because I don't think anybody's broken through. But on the other hand, why are so many people running? Because they all see, well, first of all, there was no front runner. There's been a clear leadership void in the Democratic Party because, frankly, defeats. And so a lot of people are saying, we think Scott Walker's beatable and this is my chance. So that's why we got so many candidates.
John, is the size of the field at this point in the race a bad thing for Democrats, or does it work in their favor?
You know, I think if they were better known, if they were more of equal standing in the public mind, it would be a problem. It would be a more divisive and difficult primary. But since most of these people are relatively unknown, and Evers has the reputation among most of the people in the Democratic Party and the state as a whole, it's not what it could be. I also don't sense there hasn't been a lot of banter back and forth between these candidates. It hasn't been very acrimonious. They seem to, Joe and I have both been in primaries. When there's lots of people in a primary, it's really very difficult to establish a position outside of the party framework. Primaries are very interesting because everybody basically believes the same thing, and so differentiating yourself is really hard.
Joe,
and there's one other thing, John, that is kind of important here, and I think John's going to agree with me. When you have multiple candidates like this, there's a lot of people with financial resources that want to help defeat Scott Walker that are sitting on their money and waiting to see who wins the primary. And I don't think money is going to be an issue in September and October for the Democratic nominee. I think millions are going to pour in.
Joe, what about the timing of the primary and where the candidates are today in terms of reaching voters? Is that of any concern to you?
Well, first of all, when Wisconsin moved its primary to the middle of August, that was purely partisan political shenanigans to get college kids away from the polls. But saying that, you know, if you're looking at the state of play, you know, with 2 weeks to go, there's really been no acrimony. I agree with John. There's really been no ability for any candidate to own the airwaves. I think Kel DeRoyce has been on for a week or so, but I assume a few of the Malin Mitchell and Tony Evers will be up probably any hour now. And, you know, there's just nothing that seems to be changing anything. And I expect turnout to be better than people think, because I just think people are upset.
Well, there certainly seems to be a lot of interest on the Democratic side, with eight candidates running and multiple primaries across the state for other offices as well. Tony Evers announced yesterday that he's asking for $600 million more for special education funding in the next budget. He is the state superintendent of public instruction. Joe, how are our voters supposed to parse what's part of his day job and what's part of the campaign?
Well, he should be able to do both. He is the state superintendent of schools, and he has to be proposing a budget for the current governor who he's running against. I mean, that's part of his job. The governor is expecting budget proposals from agencies, you know, around this time of the year, in a month or two. And this is just part of the norm. I think it's acceptable and expected.
John, Governor Scott Walker faces similar skepticism. What should voters consider when they watch candidates already in public positions?
You know, I thought this was pretty shrewd. You make a proposal within your administrative range. About this time of the year, he's supposed to be proposing his budget. And he puts Walker in the position of either turning back of an increase in educational spending or accepting it. I think it's very shrewd. Incumbents, it's sort of an interesting race here because the incumbency of both candidates is different in a different way. I don't think Tony Evers has ever been viewed as a Democrat. He's been viewed as essentially head of the state education system. He's been a man without political content, where Walker is highly politicized, even for a Republican. So we have an interesting contest there between somebody who is not politicized in terms of people's vision of them and one who is very politicized. I think what Walker will do, if it's Tony Evers, and I suspect Tony's going to get it, I think what Walker will do is try to make him politicize, try to make him an extreme Democrat. And that's going to be hard because up to this point, Tony Evers has, to the best of my knowledge, not taken a position on a host of issues.
How is he going to get Nancy Pelosi wrapped around Tony Evers' neck?
You don't. I mean, it's almost impossible to put him alongside the kind of figures that Republicans hate. He just hasn't been there.
How important, John, is education as an issue in this election? I know earlier we said this election was probably not going to really be about issues, but Democrats are taking shots at Walker on the education issue. He's calling himself the education governor. Is this kind of thing going to have traction with voters in November, or are we in a situation where the issues don't matter? This is all about the gut.
I think the latter. I've often wondered how much education actually motivates voters. Years ago when I ran for office, let me qualify this. People will affirm education as an important thing for government expenditure and improvement. You'll get universal support on that. But whether it actually gets people to the polls, I'm suspicious. I just don't know if education gets people to the polls.
Joe, could Governor Walker's message be a preemptive response to facing off one-on-one against EPI Secretary Tony Evers?
No, I just think it's part of his... Well, sure, that might be their theory, but here's the thing. This is Scott Walker's political modus operandi. Every election year, he becomes Mr. Pro-Healthcare and Pro-Education, and the other 3 years, he spends trying to tear it apart. You got to remember, this is the guy who broke up our public educational system. Teachers today, 8 years after he dropped the bomb, are making less in real dollars than they were making 8 years ago. Do you think they're going to forget? And this whole issue plays into Scott Walker in both 2010 and 2014, which I would argue were wave Republican election years, and he squeaked by with 52%. I see a wave Democratic year coming, and I think, when you look at it, he can't play that card because some of those groups, he got a lot of teachers to support him in 2010. He got a lot of, especially building trades types Republicans to support him in 2010 and 2014. That's not happening this time. He has upset his own coalition.
Tony Evers is leading other Democrats in the Marquette polls and other polls. Still, more likely voters are undecided than say that Tony Evers is the answer. Are we putting too much stock in his potential as the Democratic nominee? John, we'll take you first and then Joe.
Do you mean for the primary?
For the primary, yeah.
I would be shocked if Tony Evers doesn't take this primary. The rest of the candidates just haven't gained sufficient traction, and the primary is too close to, unless somebody has some money in the bank and they're going to have an incredibly widespread and deep advertising campaign. I don't see any of these people catching him.
John, I see on a similar vein, I see that both Malin Mitchell and Kel DeRoyce may spend more advertising dollars than Tony Evers, but I don't see it as like a 5-1 or 6-1 differential. I see it as maybe a 1.5-1 or maybe even 2-1, and that isn't enough usually to swing like 25 points.
Is this about the fact that Tony Evers has stood for statewide election multiple times, so he's got better name recognition than the other seven candidates running?
Absolutely. I am surprised. When I ran for office the first time, we ran some very inexpensive ads that simply introduced me to the public. And I've been surprised that none of these candidates have done a kind of, hello, my name is, that kind of ad that leads to recognition, that builds name recognition. I'm really surprised. Those kind of ads you can run on the radio relatively inexpensively around the state. And just maybe they just don't have the money. I don't know. Have you seen information on money in terms of these people?
Joe?
Well, the last reporting period was 3 weeks ago or so, and that doesn't tell you enough of what you need to know. I do believe that there will be some outside money spent on Malin Mitchell's behalf by some labor unions, and I think that Emily's List will spend a little bit of money on Kel DeRoyce's case. But nobody stood out as being that far ahead. Kelda had the most money in hand, but she loaned herself $350,000. That's not a sign that her fundraising was deep. It was a sign that she was willing to take a big chance on herself, and good for her for doing it, provided she gets through. Otherwise, not so good.
Let's take a call here. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show today.
Hi, thank you for having me. I would say that I have voted for Tony Evers in the past for a state superintendent. I respect him, but and I will be voting for him in November if he wins the primary, but I do not plan on voting for him in the primary. And the reason is because, number one, I'm looking for someone who can beat Walker, and two, in the last head-to-head poll against Scott Walker, which, yes, was back in June, so it was about a month out of date, but it said two different candidates actually did better head-to-head against Scott Walker than he did. Those were Mike McCabe, who did the best, and Malin Mitchell behind him. And I would certainly like somebody to defeat Scott Walker. And one of the things that appeals to me about Mike McCabe on top of that is he's somebody that I take seriously on campaign finance reform, which certainly is a worthwhile issue in overall, I think, for the state.
Nate, thanks for your call. Joe, John, is that true? Is anyone performing better head-to-head against Walker?
No. By the way, Nate, the caller, I mean, we started this show talking about two polls that have come out in the last week, not so one from 2 months ago. And Mike McCabe, and it's fine to support him, but if you're a Democrat, why would you support somebody who's not a Democrat?
Well, Joe, Tony doesn't have deep reputation as a Democrat.
He is a member of the Democratic Party, at least. Mike McCabe thumbs his nose on that, John.
How important is that? How does that play out with actual voters going into the booth, who's actually a member of the party and who isn't, do they even know?
No, it's not so much who's a member. It's where's your value system? I mean, Mike McCabe used to work for a Republican. As you can guess, I'm not a big fan. And I don't normally say that about people, but I think he's using the Democratic primary process simply to advance his own goals versus to stand for values that I think Democrats all the way back to Franklin Roosevelt stood for.
John Sharpless, how do you see this?
I was a little surprised that he hasn't been more directly challenged on his coming. I guess I didn't remember whether he was a committed Republican activist or simply he had spent some time working for Republican state legislatures.
Or the latter.
I don't think he's a sort of famous Republican, but I've been a little surprised that he hasn't been challenged more for not having credentials. Most of these people have very strong credentials in the party, and he does not.
Hmm.
I'm not sure. All of them, with the exception of Tony Evers, simply lack statewide name ID. They're all struggling with that. I don't know. It might be they're in the race, not about this race. They just want to begin to build some credentials as a person who's worthy of consideration in the future. I think, except for Paul Soglin, who I would guess is maybe it's time for Paul to retire.
Okay. One
other thing that Nate brought up that I think is a negative on Mike McCabe that I think other candidates could bring up in the next 2 weeks, and not trying to just pick on Mike, but he's the only candidate who has said he wouldn't commit to supporting whoever won the primary.
Is that a big issue for voters? I mean, Democratic Party unity?
It is in a primary when your real goal goes back to what John and I have been saying, is that this isn't an issue debate as much as it's a gut debate. And the issue is Donald Trump and Scott Walker. And if you're trying to become the Democratic nominee for governor and you don't win that primary and you're not willing to say, I believe that any of these candidates would be better than Scott Walker, I think that's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's interesting, and I was thinking about this recently. None of these people are hardcore left progressives in the who would appeal to the Bernie Sanders community. I thought it was interesting that this race did not draw someone who's more to the left and more committed to the progressive platform.
Mm. And we'll continue our discussion about that when we come back after the news. We're talking about the primary race for governor in the state of Wisconsin. 8 Democrats running to see who has a chance to replace Governor Scott Walker in the governor's mansion in the state of Wisconsin. My guest, John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison. Joe Winicky, former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. You can join us at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The primary is 2 weeks away. This hour we're talking about the crowded field of Democrats who want to replace Republican Governor Scott Walker in November, with John Sharpless, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Joe Winicky, former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Let's talk in this segment about some of the other candidates running under the Democratic flag. We mentioned Mike McCabe earlier. He and Malin Mitchell, But there are five other Democrats running in this race. Let's just quickly talk about some of these other people. Josh Paid is a political newcomer. He entered the race after the other people. Some far better known were already in the running. Why would someone jump into a crowded field like this, and particularly late? Let's start with John Sharpless and then go to Joe Wienicke on this.
Well, I did that. In 98, there were, I think seven candidates running for the second district Republican nomination. And I'll have to tell you, frankly, I just thought that it was, with that many candidates, I could win. This doesn't sound very committed, but I could win by accident. And at that point in the race, there was no one who really stepped out ahead in that race. I also, and this could be the case with Josh Petty, it could be he just wants to learn about politics and get his name out there. It's an educational process to run a campaign.
Joe Wienicke?
Maybe he thought lightning would strike, and there was no clear front runner, and why not? I don't know Josh Pate, but from what I've seen of him, he's very presentable as a candidate. He seems articulate. He seems fairly decent on the issues, and why not? I'm always in favor of people being able to run, not the people are saying you shouldn't run, like the people are telling Matt Flynn he couldn't run.
Let's take a call. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, welcome to the morning show. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. Yeah, I'm just very concerned about the list of candidates. I know there's a lot of ones with good qualifications, but as your guest talked about, the name recognition, except for Evers somewhat, is not there. And, you go back in time, they ran the mayor of Milwaukee against him in the recall right after he had beat him the 2 years before. So I think the Democrats need to get their strategy together, and I'm just afraid we're going to have another 4 years of Walker unless somebody pops on the radar here.
Jimmy, thanks for your call. What about those concerns, Joe Wienicke?
Well, I'm just going to give I'm going to bring up a conservative name, Ron Johnson, who in June of 2010, like 6% of the people knew who he was. He's now U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Things can happen quickly in politics. And the 60-day interval or so that it is between it's a little less than that, between the primary and the general election can be an eternity in politics. And I would argue very strongly that no matter who wins the Democratic nomination, and I think John and I are acting like it's Tony's, several of these people could actually win this thing. I mean, let's be realistic that, at the end of the day, they're going to have momentum. Scott Walker's going to try and bloody the heck out of them. But that's what we want. I mean, I think if Scott Walker goes too hard, too negative, too nasty on a decent human being, and I think most of these people really truly are, I think it could backfire because he's already got a reputation as nasty.
Let's take another call here. Patrick is with us in Richland. Patrick, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. And this is following up a little bit on the last caller. I guess Joel thinks that, we're going to count on Walker being too nasty for us, so we'll win that way. Hey, Joel, would you give us how come the Democrats have not given us a thing to rally around for the last quite a few years? Not one thing, please.
Joe, what about Patrick's point that the Democrats lack some kind of solid rallying cry? What do you think?
It's one. Even though I did not support Bernie Sanders, it's one of the things that people rallied around Bernie Sanders on. He stood for a lot of different issues. And, from my perspective, I am sick of Democrats being mushy. Now, I think, and I got to tell you, I've felt this way for a long time. You only need three or four strong issues. One of the things that did gravitate me to Tony, two things that really gravitated me to Tony Evers was, one, I am a big believer that the state's number one function is public education. Its number two function, by the way, is infrastructure. And he's strong on those issues. But third, I just felt that he was a competent person who could do the job, because I think at the end of the day, you want somebody who you believe could do this job and do it well. But it is, you know, some people will say Tony, for example, focuses too much on education. I'm just glad he's focusing on something, because Democrats have been, we're for everybody for way too long.
John, I don't think you would ever call Joe mushy about anything, would you?
No, I wouldn't. Joe's not a mushy Democrat. It's interesting, though. I go back and look down these people's resumes. Most of these are very centrist Democrats. There isn't a tough lefty progressive among them. So I'm kind of surprised. Usually, if you have a Democratic primary, particularly in the wake of Bernie Sanders, that this primary didn't draw somebody further to the left. I'm really quite surprised.
Before we run out of time here, I want to make sure we kind of get everybody in. Kathleen Vineout has run for governor before. She's got some yard signs out. Has she made enough news in the campaign and in the debates to be a real contender? What do you think? John Sharpless, first you and then Joe.
I was surprised that she didn't capture more interest. And she may well. I don't know what her campaign funds are like, but she hasn't run a lot of ads. She is well-known. She ran for state senator and won. She has a solid reputation in the Democratic Party. I'm a little surprised there hasn't been a bit more traction for her campaign.
And, Joe, what about Kathleen?
I think Kathleen is a wonderful state senator. I think she is probably the biggest policy wonk in this group that's running. Her problem has always been a simple one, and it's that she has never shown an ability to raise the resources you need to run a statewide race. And, you know, that's not necessarily a detriment. You could be a great person, you're just a lousy fundraiser. But it's a problem when you represent 1/33rd of the state, and you're trying to get known in the other 32 parts of the state.
Well, let's talk about money for just a second. Do the Democrats have somebody like John Menard who can write million-dollar checks for them?
Oh, in the primary, no. But I mean,
in the general election, I mean, regardless of who wins, is there enough money behind the Democratic contender, whoever it ends up being, to win in November?
The Democratic nominee will spend millions of dollars in this race, rest assured. People are waiting to open their checkbooks to see who wins. Part of it is because nobody has stood out, and there hasn't been, you know, with this many candidates, people are content to wait. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons you're not seeing as much for TV ads. And John knows, and I know, because we've been in these races, when you have many decent candidates running, nobody likes to open their checkbook.
Mm.
I think that I know we're running out of time, and we didn't get a chance to talk about this. If Evers wins, and if he beats Scott Walker in the fall, the next question is, does that have any kind of coattails effect on the Assembly or the State Senate?
Yeah, great point.
I think that's one of the interesting things. Now, that's a lot of ifs. That's a lot of ifs. This race will close very tightly toward the end. I predict that. But if it's actually a loss for Walker, will seats be lost in the State House? And that's an interesting question.
Joe, do you think... Go ahead, John.
Yes, of course there will be seats lost. I think there's a modestly, slightly less than 50-50 chance that if Walker loses, they can take the State Senate. The Democrats could take the State Senate. They're only two seats down. And in the Assembly, if Walker loses, I would guess they will get back into the low to mid-40s.
All right. We've just got a couple of minutes left here. So let's get a quick call in from Scott in Whitewater, who addresses an earlier point, I think. Scott, go ahead very quickly.
Morning. Yeah, you just kind of made the point is that there's not a Hendricks or a Menard or a WMC that just the millions, the 5 million, the 10 million ad buys that can just take over the airwaves and just flood information. And to your Kathleen Vineout She had a lot of support in my area. There's a lot of grassroots. And then with the Parkland tragedy and her vote on the handgun issue really dried, withered on the vines in this area. But, you know, I think Kathleen's a good Democrat. I like her as well. That's my point. Thanks.
Okay. Scott, thanks. Let's go quickly to Sylvia in Baraboo here before we run out of time. Sylvia, be brief, please.
Oh, yes. I'm for Kathleen Vinehouse because she has written four alternative budgets. She knows where the money is, and she is willing, more than able, to work with across the aisle with people. And she's much for education also, and she is for the people. That is her theme, is people first.
All right.
And that's what's important.
Sylvia, thanks for the call. Joe, you talked about Kathleen being a policy wonk, and I think our caller would agree with that.
I think very highly of her.
Okay.
I'm not going to say anything other than I think very highly of Kathleen.
All right. So we didn't get a chance to talk about the U.S. Senate race, but that'll have to wait for another show. Let me just get two words from each of you. Who wins in November, Democrat or Republican? Joe, you first, and then John.
Oh, I think it's going to be a Democrat.
I don't know.
All right, John?
I know that Walker's faltering right now, but he is a tough campaigner. And as the last caller pointed out, there's some big Republican money that's going to come in behind him. I don't know if he doesn't pull this out.
Okay. Well, we'll find out. Joe Wenneke, former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party, Wisconsin. John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison. Thank you to both of you for being with us this hour. Wisconsin Public Radio is in the midst of a community engagement project called Beyond the Ballot, and you can be part of it. Our goal is to interview 500 people across the state, and we're asking everyone the same six questions. We'll use those interviews to inform our election coverage this year. Our goal is to find out what issues the people of Wisconsin really care about and get beyond the horse race of typical election coverage. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.